And welcome to Money Matters, your community economic forum. My name is Mark Cuniberti. Thanks for joining me today. This is show 313, aired live from KVMR FM in Nevada City, but you may be hearing it at a different time. We're carried on about 66 radio stations at different times. So market indices that I may be referring to today may not be accurate at the time that you're hearing this show. This is show number 313, as I said, entitled Money and Markets. Before we begin, please remember that the opinions expressed on this show are mine alone, our opinion only, and not those of any bank, investment advisory firm, or news media company. Nothing stated is meant to ensure a guarantee of any kind or construed as individual investment advice. Neither Money Management Radio, Money Matters, receives control, access, or monitor client funds, accounts, or portfolios. For a full list of services, you can see our website at moneymanagementradio.com. Everything is free at moneymanagementradio.com, our way of saying thank you for listening to your community radio station. I hold California Insurance License OL34249. And Money Matters is about you. The show is about money. As money does matter, and matters of money affect us all in some way or another. Whether you have a lot of it, a little of it, or none of it, it controls our economy, our country, our planet in some way or another. It controls the very way we live our lives. It's about your money, your lack of it, or abundance of it. It's about our lives and livelihood. In short, it's about you. Well, I'd have to add, begin the show. Can it get any weirder? Really? I mean, you got to be kidding me. 2020 is just, oh. As far as the market's concerned, social issues, the election is just incredible. So remember today, again, one more time, discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice, okay? All right. So the up and downs in the market continue to keep us guessing, right? With 2020 only three quarters of the way through, there is little doubt in anyone's mind that this year is one of the strangest ones on record. It has also seen and been a series of unfortunate events that have roiled markets, shut down economies, caused untold economic damage and personal misery, and has arguably pitted half the country's inhabitants against the other half. The result in the world of investing has been record-breaking crashes, followed by breathtaking recoveries, only to have the cycle seemingly repeat over and over as the latest news headlines hits the wires. Now, we talked about sector rotation. Sector rotation has been exhibited in spades in 2020 this year, meaning one day sectors will rise like technology, and the next day tech reverses and an industrial sector skyrocket or some other sector skyrockets, and the sector you were in gets blown to smithereens. No doubt in the repeated rinse cycles of these rotations, the amateur day trader, which may be you, has been made rich one day, only to be taken out to the woodshed the next. Mr. Newbie Day Trader, enticed by headlines of daily doubles in certain stocks, and with lots of time on his hands from being sequestered in his house, or she for that matter, has entered the markets through quick trading platforms like Robinhood, and the old proverbial E-Trade. He or she bought high flyers like Nikola and Zoom and played the riskiest sectors of the markets like cruise ships and airlines, hoping for a quick recovery and a quick double or triple in his money. But Mr. Market rarely complies and usually punishes beginners mercilessly, but only after having lured the beginning trader in by giving him an initial quick profit or maybe two quick profits to complete the setup. I've always said markets are designed to take your money, not make your money. They are run by professionals. And for you to think you can beat the quants in front of the computer screens 40 hours a week and the computers that they have at their disposal, you may have another thing coming. However, unlike the dot-com rally that continually lifted all boats in the internet arena, right? You bought a dot-com stock and you were going to make money until the end, until you didn't. The COVID-19 trading has been as bipolar as it gets, hoodwinking even the most experienced traders. The takeaway on this whole market has been unpredictability. I've always said that the market will reflect reality eventually, but its day-to-day movements are only the sum of the conceptions of the billions of players in it at any one time. What we can be certain of, from the stunning wild swings in both indexes and sectors and stocks, is that nothing is certain. Unlike one-off events like 9/11, Y2K, or a major bank imploding, where the event has a beginning and a definite end, COVID-19 is different. Its outcome is unknown. Its timing is uncertain. It could end tomorrow with a vaccine announcement or go on for months or even years. The decision on how to address the markets and how to address COVID have been difficult and controversial, to say the least. The radical idea of shutdown has devastated economies worldwide. Businesses have folded and will continue to do so, causing untold human suffering. COVID-19 itself has sickened millions and killed hundreds of thousands. Adding market entry in an election, which is arguably the most contentious in history, and now one candidate has caught COVID. Like I said, can it get any weirder? Adding insult to injury, or insult to uncertainty, wildfires in the West only adds to the suffering and heaps on more uncertainty. Navigating these markets has been difficult, if not impossible, for many. In times like these, you might think that the fewer things investors do to try and second-guess the next turn, the fewer things you do to try and second-guess the next turn in direction, perhaps the better. You might consider lightening up on holdings and going to more cash, selling some stocks and going to more cash. Cash smooths out bumps and grinds, and no one argues that going to cash reduces volatility. Short-term U.S. Treasuries can be provided as a safe fund. You can buy them individually or in funds. They have treasury funds, as well as increasing more in fixed income holdings. Fixed income might be preferred stocks, bonds, mortgage-backed securities. But even there, the investor must be careful what he chooses. Professional management is available for those throwing up their hands in despair. But as in all things, take your time in selecting those that might steward your retirement funds and interview many of them. For a list of questions of what you might ask a retirement professional that you're interviewing, you can send an email through moneymanagementradio.com. And of course, again, everything there is free. That's our way of saying thank you for listening to this station. For those attempting to go it yourself in your portfolio, education is the cornerstone of progress. And the more you learn about what makes markets tick, the better your odds are of successfully navigating the current economic environment, which at some point will settle down and return to whatever normal is, for sure. We might say when that happens is anyone's guess. Praying for the nation, right? There you go. My name's Mark Cunaberti. We'll be back with more of Money Matters on your community radio station. And welcome back to your community radio station and this edition of your economic forum entitled Money Matters. My name is Mark Cunaberti. Thanks for joining me. You're listening to show 313, Money and Markets, today. So, the shutdown from COVID-19 has unarguably taken a devastating toll on American business and indeed worldwide. Nor has it been felt more than in the businesses that solicit their wares in a group setting. Well, who would that be? Motels, hotels, convention centers, airlines, concert halls and venues, movie theaters, resort destinations, and theme parks all encompass the necessity of group gatherings or close person-to-person contact. The full effect on these types of business is incalculable. Full effect of these types of businesses is incalculable, what the shutdown has done. It won't be until we get a vaccine and relax all the shutdown restrictions that we get an idea of just how bad the damage we have caused. In this analyst's opinion, the damage that we will eventually see and add up when all the numbers are done will be worse than anyone can imagine. Although strong balance sheets and high relative profit margins can fortify a company's ability to withstand a prolonged shutdown, something that we would never anticipate we would have had to go through, one particular business has notoriously thin profit margins with little room for error. And that business is the restaurant business. Both these individual mom and pop restaurants and the big corporate owned ones. Keeping the seats constantly packed with butts is a major key to a successful restaurant, and those that thrive do exactly that, keep the seats packed. Obviously, the shutdown has shuttered many of these establishments either partially or completely, and some have closed for good, and some will reopen and then subsequently close for good. So goes the ongoing bleed out of restaurants everywhere. I estimate hundreds of thousands of mom and pop restaurants will go 4 feet up and never return. There have been some notable bankruptcies which have cried uncle and sought protection in the bankruptcy courts. They include some of these I hadn't heard of, but this show is carried nationwide, so there's probably some of you that have heard of some of these, and some of us have all heard of these. First Food Global declared bankruptcy. They include the Bravo and Brio chains. Sustainable Restaurant Group, SRG. They have the Bamboo and Quickfish stores. NPC International. They're the operator of Wendy's and Pizza Hut. California Pizza Kitchen, which is in California here. 2J's. They've sought bankruptcy. Soup Plantation and Sweet Tomatoes, they've sought bankruptcy. CEC, standing for Chuck E. Cheese. Ugh. Sorry to see them go. Fig and Olive and Sizzler. Now, it doesn't mean when they filed bankruptcy that they're going to go. There's two types. There's 7 and 11. 11 is reorganization. You basically screw all your debtors and reorganize. 7 is you go the way of the dodo. No doubt the list of restaurants going under will be a lot longer as time clicks on. I detailed in an article I wrote on May 17th entitled The Changing Business Landscape. I forecasted in that article, May 17th, a plethora of companies large and small would start to line up for bankruptcy protection in the courts around the nation. This has already started and likely will continue with a vengeance. Not only will many people be fired or furloughed during the restructuring, some companies will not return under the restructuring Chapter 11 bankruptcy, but be entirely dissolved in the final Chapter 7. When you file Chapter 7, you're basically gone. Those jobs will never come back. As a result, creditors may not be paid, which in turn will cause other bankruptcies. They won't pay their bills, which in turn will cause other bankruptcies. The domino effect of filings will ensue, affecting much more than the restaurant industry as the dominoes fall backwards. We can also expect bankruptcies in the hotel motel chains, some vacation resorts, some airlines, cruise ships, theme parks, energy companies, a host of other industries too numerous to name, but there's going to be a lot of them. The fallout from COVID, of course, in human terms, is beyond anything previously witnessed in modern times. Add to that the damage to businesses and subsequent economic damage the shutdown has and will cause, and it boggles my mind. Many have argued since the onset a prolonged shutdown would cause too much economic damage, too much damage to consider initiating. I was one of them. I said we should not shut down. The damage will be too great. While others insisted it was a necessary evil to contain the virus. So that's arguably. We don't know what will happen if we didn't shut down. I know some of you will say the virus would have killed everyone. I don't know about that. It does have a survival rate. But I can tell you that the World Economics Studies Group says that we'll see millions of people starve because of the economic shutdowns. Millions starve anyway, but when these starving countries have economic problems, even more starve. Now, what's interesting is some experts believe authorities, whether they be local, state, or federal, that they've concluded that another shutdown is off the table. Another shutdown is off the table. The damage is just too great. Now, CNBC, I've heard that CNBC has said another shutdown is off the table. It won't happen. Now, that's an interesting concept. Because if you're saying no matter how bad if COVID spikes, we won't shut down again, that is basically saying we should have never shut down. So when we hear people on the news saying we're not going to shut down again, that's basically an admission we should have never done it in the first place. The reason they're saying that they won't shut down again is because the damage is way beyond what they thought it would be, and how anybody could think it was going to be terrible is, was, in my opinion, out of their minds. I said all along we shouldn't shut down. It's going to cause too much damage. And there are some that argue you're not going to stop the virus anyway. You may slow down its rapid spread, but you're not going to stop it. It's going to get around. That's what it's going to do. Flatten the curve means they just wanted to slow it down from all hitting it once. So the medical facilities could take the overload. But you can't stop it. That's debatable. So I'll take that for what it is. So like I said, some have concluded that the shutdown would have been a huge mistake. It was a huge mistake. Not would have been. Was. Because they're not willing to do it again. Kind of proves the point that maybe we shouldn't have done it in the first place. Again, that is my opinion. Indeed, with Corona still rampant and many areas opening up regardless, the shutdown may be one of those unfortunate decisions in which no one will wantonly admit to a bad decision in hindsight. Nobody's going to say, well, we shouldn't have shut down. They're going to say, we're not going to re-shut down, but we shouldn't have. Then nobody's going to admit that, in my opinion. I will say that there's no right answer to this COVID event. It is an unfortunate and horrible situation. But as an economist, I am petrified by just how bad this will be for our economy, the shutdown. And we don't know. And indeed, the entire world, the millions that will die needlessly of starvation due to the business turndown. There's going to be more people dying. Suicide rates are said to be on the increase, domestic violence, alcoholism, drug abuse. Like I said, my opinion only, and may not necessarily reflect those of any of the media outlets you're hearing this on, is that we should have never shut down. It was a huge mistake. It should have never been mandated. And I know a lot of you out there believe it was okay to shut down. But I guess the only way we'll finally know is, one, will they shut down again? I don't think they will. And two, we have shut down. Will the virus be stopped? Because if it's not stopped, what good was the shutdown? And some might say, well, we didn't shut down enough. Well, the point being, can you shut down enough? Maybe it's not possible for a civilization of this many people and this many different opinions to shut down to the point that was needed to stop this thing completely. And as a result, you shouldn't have shut down. You don't try something that's impossible. It might have been impossible to convince everybody to wear a mask. I don't know. It might have been impossible. So why attempt a shutdown, really? I have no problem myself with masks. I wear masks. We got no problem with it. I don't think me wearing a mask is a sign I'm going to get on the next train to Auschwitz. So, in any case, I've always held the opinion, my opinion only, that this shutdown is a huge mistake. It never should have happened. I don't think they're going to do it again. And that's an admission they never should have done it in the first place. But to go that way and find out how that would have went is now impossible. We'll find out what would have happened. Because if we don't shut down again, that's going to be a great example of what would have happened had we not shut down. I myself don't think you can stop the thing. It's coming. I think it's coming for me, and I think it's coming for you. It's a horrible thought, but I think it's coming. We're going to have to live with it, with whatever decisions we made. We're going to have to live with whatever decisions we have made. And I hope as a nation and globally, we'll be able to deal with the consequences and persevere. I have no doubt that we will survive. In what form? How much damage will be done? I don't know. But in the meantime, as to the damage it will cause, I'm going to say something I haven't said in a long time on this show. You ain't seen nothing yet. You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Money Matters. My name is Mark Cuniberti. Thanks for joining me today. I have always said printing money solves economic problems. If it solves economic problems, how come we still have economic problems? Our money supply, basically our currency, the U.S. dollar, is handled by the Federal Reserve, called the Fed. One of their missions is to assist in the financial stability of the system any way it can. It has limits on what it can do, yet some argue it has exceeded those limits in recent decades. Savings and loan bailout in the 80s, 1997, long-term capital management, dot-com crash, Y2K scare, 9/11, then the 08 real estate crash, and now COVID. The reasons for Fed intervention can be argued. Interestingly enough, each subsequent crisis has been bigger than the last. Therefore, each intervention by the Fed has encompassed more and more money. Right? It's taking more money. The Fed has a handful of tools it can use to try and juice the economy from what ails it. Those tools include lowering overnight interest rates, Fed funds rate, so it's called, so financial institutions can borrow money cheaper. Lower overnight rates bleed over to the consumer credit cards, making your borrowing cheaper. The Fed can also add funds to the repurchase agreement mechanism, the repo. Kind of a complicated mechanism, but what it does is it lubricates conduit for corporate credit. They can borrow money overnight. This repo market is completely necessary for corporate America to operate, and it has frozen up at times during severe market stress. The Fed can also buy treasuries and agency debt. That's called QE. You've heard of QE. QE is mentioned in the news as a major tool of the Fed. Increasing QE increases the U.S. government deficit. It is seldom argued that these tools are outside of the Fed's actions. Where the Fed crosses into the proverbial gray area is in the purchasing of private debt. Corporate bonds and bond funds, or loaning money to private companies. Not supposed to do that. They may also, in conjunction with the Treasury Department or related government entity, be buying individual company stock or stock funds outright. That is rumor. Most analysts agree this would definitely be outside their scope of permitted actions, using public money to buy private for-profit company stock. Much of the money created by the Federal Reserve is then funneled to the U.S. government directly for stimulus payments, bailouts and programs, infrastructure and other projects, and direct assistance to you, the consumer. Each time questions have been raised about the legality of Fed intervention, the reasoning trumps the discussion. In other words, many in Congress may be hesitant to voice concerns over reining in the Fed when Americans are in dire need of assistance. It is interesting to note that the Feds obviously feel the tools it explicitly has are not enough if it keeps going into more gray areas. The Fed could be said to have ventured off course in a recent bailout starting even before the 08 crisis. Nobody's objected very much. The Fed governors may be of the opinion as long as the economy needs are there and they're big enough, the rules it operates under should and will be relaxed. What good are rules if you're going to relax them, right? After all, it has repeatedly dipped its proverbial toe into the other areas of influence without much fanfare or objection. During economic crisis, both parties seem to be on board. The real question does, the main tool of the Fed, which is manufacturing paper currency, the U.S. dollar, and to throw wherever it's needed, whenever it's needed, does it really solve a crisis? Or does it just paper over a symptom of a much greater problem? Since the bailouts are getting larger and larger with each crisis, and they are they using permanent solutions? Or why do we keep having new crises? The cause for the new crisis is always new and surprising, but there are always new economic crises. Does printing money just push the day of reckoning if there is one further out into the future? If the next crisis is even larger than COVID-19, which is hard to imagine, of course I couldn't imagine something was larger than 08, can the same tools be used again and again without ramifications? Experts disagree on the answer to this question, but a major concern is inflation raising its ugly head. When you print a lot of money, inflation cometh. In the near future or far future, whatever. Other countries throughout civilization who have tried monetary creation, money printing, to permanently solve economic crisis have not come out unscathed. The ramifications have run the gamut to moderate inflation, creeping stagflation, which is economic stagnation coupled with inflation, or a complete currency collapse. So where are we headed? I don't know. But I'm a firm belief, my opinion only, that we are headed for inflation. Not now, but soon. And we are seeing it in selected areas. I think it's going to get a lot worse. So we'll see what happens. Anyway, that concludes this edition of Money Matters. It's edition 313. My name is Mark Cunabrady. It's called Money and Markets today. You can check out our website at moneymanagementradio.com, moneymanagementradio.com. If you see the need, there is no charge on that website. It is agrata, our way of saying thank you for listening to your community radio station. And remember, opinion expressed on this show are my opinions only and may not necessarily reflect those of any bank, investment advisory firm, news media company, this radio station, its staff, management, or underwriters, or any broker-dealer. Nothing stated on this website and nothing stated in this newscast is meant to ensure a guarantee of any kind or be construed as individual investment advice. Neither Money Management Radio or Bay Area Process, which is the corporation on which the radio show is under, control access or monitor client funds, accounts, or portfolios. I hold California Insurance License OL34249. And if you'd like a comment on the show, send it to the program director at this radio station. My name is Mark Cunabrady. I want to thank you for joining me. Have a great day.